I'm Jimmy Floyd in for Brian Lehrer, and a quick correction from yesterday's show. During our conversation on the life of former Governor Hugh Carey, it was incorrectly stated that Carey was not listed in the Encyclopedia of New York City, but he is in the second edition published last year, page 203, in fact. Now we want to know what's on your mindset list. These are the things that have always or never been true for you based on when you were born, and it shapes the way you see the world. So, for me, it has never been legal to offer separate facilities based on race. Elected officials have always worn American flag pins on their lapels, and there have always been the Grateful Dead. Black and whites have always been kissing on TV, and up until Friday, the U.S., had always had a AAA rating. And you have a mindset list, too. It's all chronicled in a new book, The Mindset Lists of American History. And the two authors of that book join me now, Tom McBride, humanities professor, and Ron Neef, emeritus director of public affairs. They're both at Beloit College. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you for having us.
Good morning.
So first, explain what a mindset list is and the point of coming up with these lists.
A mindset list is a series of items that detail what has always been true or never been true for 18-year-olds entering college, just graduating from high school. Essentially, it details what for them has always or never been normal.
So in the book, you include these lists, but you also include analysis. So, for example, I use the year that I turned 18. That was 1983, and I said some of the things on my mindset list, according to your book. So what does that say about my worldview and how I would view other generations for the class of 1983?
Well, it's very interesting that your particular class is in the book right on the money, because one of our classes, as you know, is the class that was born in 65, graduated from high school in 83. And that particular class, of course, was a class of many firsts. It was your class was the first latchkey generation. It was.
Oh, my mother is listening.
Okay. your class was, in fact, the class that has come to be known retrospectively as Generation X. It is the class that I think looked back on the 1960s as the generation that the previous generation that enjoyed the party, whereas, in fact, your class sort of got the hangover. It was a class, I think, really that grew up with a number of failed presidencies, that grew up with stagflation, that grew up with Watergate. And it was, of course, also the class that came of age with the presidency of Ronald Reagan.
So these are the things that you know from a young age that really stick with you and shape you for your whole life. You can't really think of the world in another way.
That's right.
But it seems that the book is supposed to help you try to imagine how other generations see the world, too.
Well, the hope here is that that perhaps with using the book, people will come back together at the dinner table and the kitchen table and start talking about how things were when parents and grandparents were that age. We've been working with some high schools here using it in AP history courses, sending the students back home to ask those questions that, for some of us, we wish we had asked our parents when they were around. They've put their list together, and then they've gone to the original sources and tried to put them into context, much as we do in the book.
Well, let's ask our listeners what has always or never been true for them. Tell us the year you turned 18, and tell us, I actually had to do the math, gentlemen. That's I'm at math. I knew what year I'd been born, but I couldn't quite remember what year I'd graduated from high school.
Half of our work is subtraction in this business.
Well, I also am a September baby, so I graduated high school when I was 17, so it was a little different. Tell us what has always and never been true for you and how you think it might shape your life. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9999. 9692. And, you know, the idea is what shaped your thinking? What was the mindset of your generation? And we already have a couple of calls, gentlemen. Here's Anne in the East Village. Anne, join us on WNYC. What is your mindset?
Hi, how are you? When I was in fifth and sixth grade, which was in the late 60s, you still, as a girl, had to wear dresses. And it wasn't, and I hated that. I mean, I was always a little athlete, so I used to wear shorts underneath my horrible little dress. And not that I hate dresses, but I just wish I had the option. And when they started to become allowed in the sixth grade, I had a couple pantsuits, but one time I tried to get away with wearing a dress and a matching color pair of pants, and the teacher, she said, no, that's not an official pantsuit. It doesn't match.
Oh, but didn't Lucille Ball and Katharine Hepburn lead the way
school.
For you? Oh.
Going to school. You had to wear a little dress. It was just so insane, and now there's just, like, no dress codes for anyone. Everyone's a big slob.
Well, that was the mindset then, and I guess slob is the mindset now. Let's take Anne, thank you so much for calling
bye
and
bye.
Sharing.
Those
and
were the days when people had to dress up to fly.
Yes. Well, I have to say, gentlemen, I remember my first flight, and I was all dressed up, as our caller described, Anne described. Let's take a call from John. He's in Manhattan. John, what is your mindset, and give us a sense of your generation.
Hi, I was born in 1941. I was 18 in 59 and blown away in 64 by Marshall McLuhan's Understanding Media. So I'm a literate person. I read books and identify, you know, the structure of myself by the books I've read, and my students, you know, for the most part, don't know what a book is, and my father couldn't stand McLuhan, so I'm like a bridge generation that could both be in a book world and an electronic media world.
Can you think of something, John, that defined your generation that the kids today absolutely know nothing about?
Well, I see my generation as very much defined by electronic media, and, you know, for me, I had to learn computers. They're born knowing it.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say no, that you know, my generation came of age just as electronics was happening, and, you know, my students swim in that age.
Hmm. Thank you so much for calling, John. Always good to hear from a teacher. And I guess, gentlemen, that's what inspired your project, because you are teachers.
That's right. In fact, John's, I think he said he was born in 1941. One of our chapters is the class that was born in 1939, graduated from high school in 1957. The name of the chapter is Fluoride Has Always Been Controversial. So if you're looking for things that John would have experienced or his generation would have experienced that today's young people have no idea of, it would be when fluoride was actually thought of by some people as a commie plot. They would have no memory, for example, when all TVs were black and white, when there were only three, or when DuPont was a network, only four major networks, when you had something called rabbit ears on top of the TV set, when there was a dial to touch, and when people would put tinfoil on top of the rabbit ears in perhaps the rather desperate hope that it would improve reception.
Yeah, I love the example you have in the book. People in their early 30s have always observed Martin Luther King Day,
right,
Junior Day in schools, and have always been advised to just say no. And civil rights leaders have always been celebrated on stamps.
Right.
And then, of course, other generations would have lived through the civil rights struggles and certainly would not have celebrated Martin Luther King Day in school. It's just a fascinating thing for these young people not to have known those other times. Let's take some other calls, gentlemen. Janine is calling from Fairfield, Connecticut. Janine, tell us about your mindset, please.
Hi. So I was born in 1991. I'm 20. And when I was in fifth grade, the September 11th attacks happened. And so that was, I mean, that's everything for me, for my generation, I think. I remember that, you know, it was elementary school at first, and then it was everything else. I felt a big disconnect from, like, the younger students in the school who weren't told initially what had happened. So, and then after that, I think that's when things like everyone had a cell phone after that because their parents wanted to be in touch because of things like that. And I think that's a big part of the, like, the relationship with our parents now.
Thank you so much, Janine. A defining moment, certainly, for your generation, for your call. We really appreciate it. And Mike in Manhattan is calling. Mike, you're on WNYC.
Hi. I was born in 1955 and turned 18 in 1973, and gay people do not get married. As of 2 weeks ago, my partner of 24 years is now my husband. I can't believe it.
Mm. Thank you, Mike, for sharing that. I can hear the emotion in your voice.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for sharing. And Mike, of course, expresses something very, very emotional for so many people and a trend we're seeing across the country, gentlemen, something that this next generation may come to see as part of their mindset.
Correct. In fact, going back to the previous caller who talked about the seminal nature of 9/11 for her, one of the interesting experiments that we've conducted is to ask different generations what they regard as the Kennedy tragedy. And for some of them, of course, it is the shooting in Dallas. For others, it's Chappaquiddick. For others, it's the plane crash of JFK Jr. And for a few others, it's even, in fact, the rape case down in Florida. Hmm. So it's really quite interesting to note how different generations will have different notions of what the Kennedy tragedy was, what they mean by the day the music died. For some of them, it's the death of Elvis. For some of them, of course, it's Buddy Holly and the Big Bopper. For others, it's Kurt Cobain.
It's fascinating how many of those events you mentioned involve someone in the Kennedy family.
Right.
Let's take a call from Lillian in Port Washington, New York.
Hello.
Lillian, you're on WNYC.
Thank you for taking my call. I grew up under the FDR administration. He was my president for the first 14 years of my life. And when he died, I thought the world was just going to slide off into the ocean, I mean, the United States. He taught us about the Keynesian theory of economics. And it's disturbing to me to see how many lies are being set forth. We're not anywhere near the Keynesian economic theory. His theory was to put money where it doesn't go, and that because these people, like, into the arts, because artists have to buy food, have to buy clothing, have to pay rent, and that's how it trickles down into the major system.
And Lillian, I'm at the end of my show, so you have to give me your mindset in 10 seconds or less.
Okay, my mindset is that we need to be investing now in the future of this country, not saving.
All right, Lillian, thank you so much. I think that's a fine note on which to end. The book is called The Mindset Lists of American History. The authors are Tom McBride and Ron Neef, and they are at Beloit College. They are the authors of this wonderful book. I commend it to all generations. And I thank you, gentlemen, for being with us.
Thank you for having us.
And I am Jamie Floyd, in for Brian Lehrer. I will be back tomorrow to talk about all sorts of interesting things again. Talk to you then.